Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Tuesday. It's Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We'll hit the high school baseball stuff at the end of the show. 4A3, District 4A3 was ended yesterday with the Elks 4-0 win over Weatherford. So what's next? Kind of have an idea of what we might be able to expect next week when the regional tournament comes back to Ackley Park for the third straight season. We got slow pitch softball. We got small school district tournaments going on. I think maybe even one of them starts today over in Canute. So there's lots of things to talk about with spring sports. NBA, end of an era last night. Is that the last time we're going to see Steph, Clay, and Draymond all wearing the same uniform with the Warriors? LeBron does OKC a solid in a lot of people's minds with beating New Orleans. So they're the seventh seed rematch of the Western Conference Finals with Denver coming up in round one. Zion was awesome. Biggest game of his career last night, and he delivered until the same thing that happens to Zion happened. He got dinged up, hurt, not really sure what his status is for Friday. Kings or Pelicans, who would be the better matchup for the Thunder? And then also the East play-in game starts tonight. Then, did you see the ratings for the WNBA draft?
The draft? No.
The draft.
No, I did not.
Dwarfed any in history.
Really?
Yes. And we can thank one person for that.
Well, yeah.
Caitlin
Clark.
That's
why I didn't watch, because I knew, well, there's no drama here.
So
we know who's going number one.
There's, now that she is officially number one and we know how much she makes, there's a whole bunch of people that are getting a lesson in WNBA financial futility when they're trying to compare what Victor Wembanyama makes in his first year as a rookie in the NBA versus what Caitlin Clark will be.
Cue the Bill Burr skit about the WNBA. That explains it all.
I saw that all over social media yesterday. So we can talk about that. But right off the top of the show, we are pleased to be joined by the new head basketball coach here in Elk City, also the head boys golf coach here in Elk City, Mr. Tyler Fole. Tyler, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Hey, all right. So, welcome. You've been around these parts over in Arapahoe for the last few years as an assistant, but just tell everybody, kind of introduce yourself, where you're from, where'd you grow up, and then kind of where your career has taken you along the way.
I grew up in a very small town in northwestern Oklahoma, Fargo, Oklahoma. I graduated with about 13 kids, so very, very small. I graduated college at Southwestern Oklahoma State University. I took my first job at Carnegie High School, where I was a girls assistant, and I got to coach under Coach Graham, who's at Anadarko Girls now, and great guy. And then I took the boys assistant job at Arapahoe, and I've been there the past 6 years, and really enjoyed my time there, and got to learn a ton about basketball and how the education world works, and it's been a blast. And when the Elk City job came open, I just made the decision I had to try to get it and jump on it, and here we are.
What originally intrigued you about education and coaching, and how did you kind of get that into your mind that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah, so I was raised by a lot of teachers and a lot of coaches, and you know, they helped me along the way. Still some of my best friends are coaches, and they've had such a great influence on me. So that's kind of all I've ever really wanted to do. There are some things I thought I wanted to do, and then I took some classes on them, and that wasn't for me. So this is kind of all I've known.
Fargo, correct me if I'm wrong, Fargo, Carnegie, Arapahoe, small schools, and now you're making the leap to a 4A school. Me and Aaron have always said there is a difference here, styles of play and everything. What will you bring? What's your style that you'll bring to the Big Elks?
Yeah, there is definitely some difference, small town, big town. I'm finding that out right now. but my style is really whatever helps us win. I don't believe we do what we do. That's really good if you got the best players and the best athletes. And we might have that. I don't know. But I think the most important thing is we just give our kids the best opportunity to win, whatever that is. Obviously that starts, Arapaho, we defend. Defense travels. It travels. Offense doesn't always do that, but if you can defend, you always give yourself a chance to be in the ball game and make some plays down the stretch.
We're talking with brand new boys head coach of the Big Elk basketball program and golf program, Tyler Fole. You mentioned Coach Graham. Who are some other guys that have influenced you or gals that have influenced you along the way?
So, Brent Caldwell, he was my high school coach. He's at Clinton. He's the assistant principal there at Clinton. Jeff Carlisle, I did my student teaching under him, and he was really the guy that got me back to Arapaho, and he's awesome, and he sells insurance now, but he's awesome, and he's done a lot for me. And then obviously Coach Rogers at Arapaho Butler, I think he's one of the best. He will never tell you that or let anybody see that, but he's one of the best, and I would take him just against about any coach, honestly. He works so hard, and obviously his kids play so hard, and he knows just about everything about the opposing team that you can know. So I've had a lot of really good coaches, and I've been very blessed from that standpoint.
Kind of to Jared's point, what about this job was so intriguing that you decided to apply and then, eventually become the head coach?
Well, we love Elk City, and my goal has always been to become a head coach, but not only be a head coach, but live in that community, and we live here, and we're not leaving. So it kind of just worked out right. The challenge is a big deal to me. I've heard they've struggled the last couple of years and this and that, and that's great. I'm good with that. I like the challenge. I've been the underdog most of my life, and that's fine. I'm willing to accept that role and work my butt off to change that.
Have you met with your players or with any of them?
I'm going to do that in roughly an hour and a half or so.
So you met with us first, and then so that's how it should
well,
work.
Well, he had to go to the middle school first and put up with them, and then yeah, he got to come here and then meet the high school guys after that. The basketball program as a whole, how do you get your style or your the culture that you want to have? How do you do that? Starting, even maybe before they get to seventh grade, but especially once they get into school ball in middle school and seventh grade, on up to when then you'll get them in high school. How do you implement that and create that culture that you want to as soon as they start wearing the brown and white?
Yeah, so number one, you got to build those relationships. You got to know the kids and live it. Don't just be there for basketball, be there for other things. Let them see you outside the court, outside of your comfort zone and that little bubble of basketball. See them on the golf course, see them on the football field, see them on the baseball field. Just be a part of the community, let them see you, and be that role model that you want to be and represent them and the school the way that it needs to be.
What are your plans this summer? Are you gonna hit up some camps, do anything like that?
Yeah, so we're gonna do some camps. I'm currently trying to get our Elk City camp going, and then we're gonna have some summer pride stuff. We're gonna be a part of that and do the lifting and open gyms and not just for high school, but we're gonna try to get some junior high kids up there and open it up to the community to come, come up there and shoot and hang out and just get everybody involved.
Yeah, to me, that's one thing. We're talking with the new head coach of the Big Elk boys basketball program, Tyler Fole. One thing that it seems like you see in all the smaller schools is a Sunday night, go to the gym. You know, and that's just, it seems like that's something that's been lacking, or it's never even really been a thing here, even all the way back to when I was in the school. Now, maybe some people had the key, but yeah, how do you get everybody to go, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, word spreads fast. If you open it up, they will come. I mean, not to use the cliche, but it's true. It just gives kids something to do other than, you know, getting in trouble or sitting at the house. I mean, you know, a couple of buddies say, hey, let's go play some basketball. Let's go shoot. Let's go hang out. You do that enough and kids will start showing up and parents will start bringing the kids that can't drive up there and it'll be good.
Okay. Enough of the basketball. That is what it is. Big Elk Golf. You're also going to be the head coach of the golf team.
Yeah, no pressure. You got two tradition-rich programs you're taking over now.
Look, just four titles in the 90s, two in the 2000s, and then but no team title since 2010. So what's the plan there? How do we get how do you get those guys ready to go and snap that streak of state titleless golf here in Elk City?
Well, you know, golf is a game of it's a mental battle between your ears. So number one, you just got to instill that confidence that you can get the job done. Obviously you got to work your tail off and have some game, but you know, the mental game in golf is so important. And, that's kind of what, you know, I would start with.
What do you see as the crossover, right, from like a basketball coach to the golf coach for you? You know, what are some things that maybe you can take from the court to the golf course, or even vice versa, that you can learn from the course and then take it back to the basketball court?
So from basketball to golf, you know, intensity, you know, practicing with intensity, with a purpose. From golf to basketball, patience. It's you know, in both sports, you know, you can't win the game in the first quarter. You can't win the tournament on the first hole, but you can dang sure lose both of them. Those are, you know, the intensity from basketball, the patience from golf. Those two kind of go hand in hand.
A lot of kids play a lot of different sports. I know here in Elk City, the football program's rolling, and then of course it overlaps a little bit with basketball. You know, with deep playoff runs, have you prepared for that to make that adjustment? I know Carnegie might have had some of that too, not Arapahoe, obviously, but are you prepared for that on bringing on those guys who were just taking off the pads and maybe you got them for like a week and then you got your first game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I want kids to be competitive all year round. You know, winning breeds winning. You need that competition. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I want us to be good at everything, whatever it is. You know, whether if we're having an academic meet, I want us to go win that, and then let's go play some basketball after. I'm good with it. That I like to win, and I like to see our kids win, and that's what I believe.
We're hanging out with Tyler Fole, the head basketball and golf coach here at Elk City. Now, the last thing I've got is behind every coach is a woman that has to, you know, spend a lot of time by herself, quite honestly, or in the gym or what have you. How much did you and Micah talk about the changes maybe in your life and in y'all's lives taking on this role as head coach?
Yeah, well, she's the best. I mean, I definitely married up. There's no doubt about that. She's, you know, obviously she's a pharmacist here in town, and you know, she's the smart one in the family, but really I'm the smart one because, you know, I got her to marry me. So, you know, we talked about it and, you know, before I went in for my final interview, we talked and she said, you know, if they make you an offer, you know, you have my blessing to do that and we're ready to go. And when they did, it wasn't shortly after I said, I'm in. We're all in, and we're ready to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. Welcome. It's really exciting. I think that you know, it's been a little bit of a downtime for both of the sports, quite honestly, over the last few years. And so it's really exciting to have you, and welcome to Elk City.
Thank you.
Head Coach Tyler Fole of Big Elk Basketball and Big Elk Boys Golf, newly hired, and now he gets to go meet his kids, the high school kids anyhow. We appreciate Coach Hunt setting it up, Tyler stopping by, and then looking forward to December for next year, seeing what the Big Elks could do and how quickly they get better. I know it's going to happen. We really do appreciate Coach Tyler Fole stopping by and introducing himself to the Elk City folks. Brand new basketball coach, boys golf coach. Looking forward to what he's going to bring to town. He's a good dude. I've been around him just a little bit at the golf course. He's a really good player.
Well, good.
Really good golfer.
I think that'll
be the main difference between maybe this golf coach and my golf coach.
Oh, no.
This one's a really good player. That one became a good player. Now, don't get me wrong.
He started practicing what he was preaching.
Yeah.
He started practicing with you guys.
Yeah.
Or after. I like the idea of every new coach should see us first before their kids.
It worked out well. And so I was getting asked questions last night. So what's he look like? I was like, man, I think white. Probably seen him at the golf course. Oh, really? What color is his cart? White. Oh, maybe. I think I might know who you're talking about.
Sure, why?
We'll find out if he knew who he's talking about or not.
Those names he mentioned, he has followed around some guys who know the sport.
No doubt.
In basketball, that is. And Elk City's getting a good one.
It's good stuff.
Yep.
Very good stuff. All right, last night, lots of eyes around the state of Oklahoma on especially the first Western Conference play-in game with the Lakers going down to New Orleans to face off against the Pelicans. For a while, it looked like a vintage LeBron game. It seemed to me like through two and a half, almost three quarters of that game, he really kind of controlled the tempo of it. You know, at times he played downhill. If he saw there's a one play on back-to-back possessions where he kind of saw that he had an open floor opportunity with Valanciunas in front of him, which Valanciunas has no chance to stay in front of even 40-year-old LeBron and score points that way. It just seemed like one of those virtuoso performances from LeBron James where everything – kind of rolls around and through him, and then all of a sudden the tank known as Zion Williamson really started to affect the game. He scored points in the first half, but I don't know how much he affected the game itself in the second half. Even as he was putting points on the board, I think he was forcing LA to do some different things defensively that maybe they didn't want to do in order to try to slow him down. And then his unselfishness kicked in, and all of a sudden, shots were going in from guys. Instead of, you know, taking off the dribble threes, they were getting catch and shoot threes, and man, they started knocking them in. Next thing you know, New Orleans from down 18 had the game tied with 3 minutes to go, and then it all just kind of went away when Zion hurt himself. And it was I still don't know what happened. You know, he had the ball at the top of the key, kind of stutter-stepped, got down the lane, laid one up and in, and tied the game at, I think, 93 at that point. And it was just kind of weird, right? And Reggie, we can talk about what Reggie said at the end, but he said, "Ooh, Zion kind of grimaced," like before we even saw the replay. And then, sure enough, timeout was called, and then you see him slam this towel down when they come back from break. Mm-hmm. And he's walking the locker room. It was almost like a perfect microcosm of Zion's entire NBA career, unfortunately.
Yeah, you can see how good he is, but the injuries creep their head or turn their ugly head. Yeah, he was great, and if he stayed in, I truly believe they would have won that game because he was rolling, had them going. But credit the Lakers, though. Credit, you know, I hate to do it, but credit LeBron for everything that you said. He's, you know, pushing 40, and he could still is able to affect a game like that, a big game like that on the road, to to get them in the playoffs with Denver. They were good, but you know, the thing about the Lakers, they've had their ups and downs this year, but right now I think they're trending up. I haven't seen like their last 10. I think they won 9 or 8 of their last 10, 9 after last night maybe. I don't think it's just going to be a 4-game sweep like it was last year. We can look at that later. But now the real question, though, back to New Orleans is, what is Zion's status for Friday against Sacramento? Because if he's out, I mean, book the Kings, right? But if clearly, right? But if he's in, he can play like that. That's another thing. You know, that's a one game thing. I mean, can he do that night in and night out? Can he do it on a leg that's maybe not 100%? A lot of questions there for Williamson.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, his first playoff experience or postseason, I guess, experience. You know, Reggie mentioned last night how disappointed he was in the semifinals of the play-in tournament or the early season tournament or whatever it's called, where he didn't play well at all. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily count as postseason, obviously, but that was his one game outside of, say, the regular season that he had ever played in the NBA until last night. And, you know, last night, all the eyes were on him, and, man, he was just incredible.
Like, well, didn't they say after that, maybe how disappointing that was, that
he changed his body.
Yes. Mid-season, you ever heard of that? Mid-season, someone changing, I mean, losing, what did he lose, over 20 pounds?
30 pounds.
30 pounds.
But that probably goes to show you how much he had to lose, if you can do it like that in the season. You know,
well, maybe that's the benefit of that tournament in the mid-season, is you open up some eyes. You get, you know, you it's kind of a wake-up call to some guys, like, listen, you need to be in shape. You need, you know, if we're going to go on a run here, maybe that's the benefit of having that thing so early in the year. I don't know. I'm grasping at straws on that one, but that, I've never seen it or heard of a guy going through in the middle of a year, a transformation to his body, obviously for the good for Williamson up until the injury.
Yeah. And it was all him. Honestly, Ingram wasn't very good. McCollum was terrible. They got some help there at some points from Alvarado. Murphy made some threes, but for the most part, the entire engine was Zion Williamson. And, you know, when New Orleans really got it rolling toward the end of the third quarter into the most of the fourth before that injury, the ball just went to him, and he either got to the rim and made a bucket, or he got in the paint, drew the entire Lakers team to him, and then found somebody open to hopefully knock down a three, and Murphy and Alvarado were the ones that were really kind of spearheading that part of the offense coming back into the game. But, you know, you ask, you know, if Williamson's out, do they have any chance against the Kings? Probably not, but, man, there's still a bunch of firepower. When you think about who New Orleans has, Ingram just coming back, and that's a problem. He's clearly a little bit rusty. But, man, you put those that three-headed monster in McCollum, that's pretty good firepower. And especially in a one-game setting, because as bad as McCollum shot it last night, we've seen him be able to go get on tears. So I wouldn't necessarily rule them out of Friday, even if Zion can't play, because just of the nature of any one game, one guy can make shots and the other guy can't, or what have you. But I think I would probably lean a little bit the Kings' way if Zion can't play and if Zion can't be 100%. Here's my question. If you're a Thunder fan, how do you want to see that game play out?
I know I said that I feel like the Thunder have figured out the Kings. They are 2-2 against them this year. They're 2-1 versus the Pelicans this season. But both teams are dangerous. You know, they're good enough to get in the play-in and put themselves in this position, so it's not like they're pushovers. But I don't know. I feel like because of the familiarity, I would probably want the Kings. But because I don't know how there's no one that physically that can match up with Williamson, and the rebounding has always been an issue with the Thunder.
Yeah, and Valanciunas too. that, you know, I think a lot of people criticized Willie Green last time New Orleans played Oklahoma City with Valanciunas only playing like 9 minutes or 11 minutes or something like that. It just seemed really weird. But at the same time, what he gives you on the offensive end, he takes away from on the defensive end because he can't guard anybody. Mm-hmm. There's really, you know, we've seen this in the past here with, say, like Enes Kanter that year against the Rockets in the first round of the playoffs. Houston had nobody that could do anything about Kanter. But the problem was you're almost trading 2 for 3 on the other end because Kanter couldn't guard. You know, there's that iconic clip in Thunder lore of Billy Donovan kind of looking at his assistant coach and saying, we can't play Kanter because he can't guard anybody. And so maybe that's what they felt like with Valanciunas in one of those Thunder games. But, you know, it's really weird because Sacramento is so explosive. But they also had a league high they blew 4 20-point games. One of those, I believe, was to the Thunder. You know, so it's almost like no matter how it's going against the Kings, you always have a chance to get back in it. And I think there's obvious matchup problems if Zion's healthy with what New Orleans does offensively. And then there's also that Herb Jones has done a really good job on SGA. Defending him. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't probably think it last if you just watched those two games last night. But overall, yeah, you probably would rather have the Kings than the Pelicans. If it's me.
I lean that way too.
Probably would rather have the Kings. I mean, you don't really have anybody for Sabonis. But it sure feels like Chet has a better chance against Sabonis than he does against Zion. Or Valanciunas. And maybe that may not be right, but it does seem like it. And even like a Jay Will, you know, Sabonis isn't like this flying around above the rim type player. You know, so maybe Jay Will, even at his limited height, can use his strength to keep him out of the paint a little bit more.
Right.
So, but we've also seen, you know, a guy like De'Aaron Fox is the one type of player that Lu Dort struggles with. Mm-hmm. Being able to keep up with the quickness of what Fox brings to the table. So we know it'll be one of those two. We know it'll be a Sunday game one in Oklahoma City. We'll just have to figure out what happens on Friday. Back to LeBron. Actually, let's go to the other game. Do you think that's the last time we see that trio, that so successful trio of Steph, Clay, and Draymond on the floor together in the Golden State Warriors uniform?
Well, you said it best off air that Klay Thompson is a shell of himself. You know, just the injuries and all that stuff, and going 0-for last night, which is it's almost sad because you know what he can do or his ability was. It would be crazy to me being Golden State if I was Golden State to keep him. I get it, the loyalty thing, but what does our man Jim always say? You can't be loyal in sports. I think it would be best for both parties. He is a free agent. If he goes find another home where he can benefit somebody else, somebody that, you know, and just change the scenery. Because if Golden State is loyal, it's to a fault if they're sticking with Thompson, because it's just not going to get better. I think they will stick with obviously Green and Steph. And they were talking last night that Steph will never leave Golden State. This is the NBA. Never say never. I mean, even Jordan went somewhere else. But Thompson, though, I don't mean this to be mean, but he's got to go. He's got to go.
I think it's so funny because that's exactly – I almost sent Jim a text last night. It was later, so I didn't. When I kind of checked the score, I'm like, what's happening on the floor for even this game – is proving your point about how loyalty stinks in sports. Because even last night, Steve Kerr playing Klay Thompson 32 minutes was loyal to him to a fault. He didn't score. He scored as many as I did. 0-for-10, 0-for-6 from 3. Meanwhile, two of the best players they had, Steph included, were Kuminga and Moody. Moody played 15 minutes. who knows what happens if that's if Clay plays 15 and Moody plays 32.
Yeah.
Who knows how that game might change? And that seems to have been, you know, there's comparisons to this team and say like the Celtics of when they broke up Pierce and Allen and Garnett. And they just did it. Right? They didn't try to milk an extra year or two out of that run. They saw the writing was on the wall and they ended it. Feels like Golden State, you know, you win the title, what, 2 years ago against Boston, and you think to yourself, okay, we can this is that moment for Golden State. They've clearly done a nice job with Kuminga and Moody as far as the guys that they've drafted to try to almost be the next wave. You know, they played a couple of rookies throughout a lot of the year. Like, how do you say that guy's name? Podziski, however you say that,
yeah,
the left-handed guy with the fuzzy hair. He was decent, especially as a lower first-round pick. And so, you know, there's some different – there's some guys there that can play. I think if you're Golden State, this has to be it. As much as you want to hold on to the past and try to run it back again, it's over. It's over.
Right. It's done.
The championship window for this group is closed.
What's sad about this to me and what's getting lost in the shuffle here is a guy named Chris Paul. Not one person asked last night, at least I didn't hear, is this it for him? Is this it for Golden State? But that guy, he's been in the league for so long, and which is incredible to me, how long he's been. I mean, think about this. He was a part of the Oklahoma City Hornets. That was his rookie year. That's how long he's been in this league. And he's probably that's the next question. Is he done? Is he retiring? Seems like that's been the same question the last 5 years with him. But Golden State as a whole, it should be done. If their front office is smart, they move on from some key pieces. And they focused on that youth that you mentioned, Moody, Kuminga. Those are good players. Those are good draft picks. And start over.
Yeah, those two with Steph and Draymond, if you want to have him back. And, you know, there's some other younger guys. With you know, Looney's been there for a while now. That Jackson Davis, as a rookie, has been pretty good. But and then what can you do if you free up the space from, you know, Clay, especially as a free agent, Chris Paul. Let's see what his status is. From a contract standpoint. But yeah, there's a lot of ways to kind of change this around on the fly and maybe not have to go through a full rebuild / tank type thing, but also supplement the good parts of what you've done with some other things as well and kind of hold on for the last couple of years of Steph. Yeah, and I think that's probably the goal, right? Is just to be able to hold on and attempt to remain relevant in the title chase for just another year or two as Steph kind of, you know, starts to be toward the end. And then after that, then maybe you can think about a complete and utter rebuild and how that's going to look with the Warriors after Steph Curry, which seems pretty crazy, right? That's happening. But let's see. Chris Paul's owed $30 million next year.
How many games did the Kings lose when Green was suspended?
He played 21. He missed 21 games.
Because of suspension.
That's right. Oh, wait. 24-25, Chris Paul not guaranteed. So that could be another. That'd be a way to step. I mean, that's a pretty good chunk. I think they already had committed 100 and counting that 30. I'm sure like I've already got like 180 something million committed for next year. It may be more of the same for another year, and then finally kind of get away from some of this and try to start a rebrand or rebuild or re-something.
And I tell you, the post-game comments from Kerr definitely suggested that this was the end of the era.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be on top all forever. We kind of kept making comments like that. Like, that's it. Goodbye, folks. You know, like Porky Pig. So, a lot of questions in Golden State in the offseason, what they do.
Yeah. I think that is correct.
When I've said it, Mark has even said in the midday show, he said it yesterday, I believe, that pendulum's swinging in a different direction. It's going away from this era that we are seeing. You know, even with LeBron, he was great last night. Can he do it in a series against Denver? You know, it's going towards these other teams like the Thunder, Orlando, this youth, this new youth movement. It's a new era of NBA basketball. And that's okay, Warriors. I mean, you had your time, and it's time for someone else.
Yeah, and it's like that elevator I talk about. You see the Lakers are starting to descend. Golden State's clearly coming down. You know, whoever else, you know, Phoenix is going to be coming that way as well. Yeah, and you've got on the other side, you've got Dallas seems to be kind of on the upward track. Obviously, you know, Denver's already there. They're kind of stationary right now. Like they're off the elevator, right? They're on the top floor.
Yeah, they're in the penthouse.
They're hanging out in the penthouse right now for the next couple of years at least. Minnesota is kind of there, I think, too, because outside of Anthony Edwards, they've got more established guys, but they're still kind of youngish, so they're kind of there as well, just kind of hanging out. You know, the Thunder are coming up there. Houston is coming up that way. Dallas is coming back that way. And then there's a team that's waiting on the elevator to get to the bottom because they're going to jump on and start coming to the top as well, at least in the West, and that's going to be San Antonio with the ridiculousness of Wembanyama and everything that he provides. It's not going to take a whole hell of a lot around him before San Antonio is really good because he's really good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a changing of the guard from the LeBron, the Steph, the KD, you know, Harden, where are the Clippers in all of this? I think they're fairly up top for at least for this year, maybe next, but that is totally health dependent. And the older these guys get, the more susceptible they are to not being there. We see it with Kawhi every single year, it feels like. And it seems like Kawhi's young. You know what I mean? He's older than you realize, but he doesn't seem like one of the really older guys.
No.
So. Yeah, it's a different time. It's about to be a completely different time in the NBA, especially in the Western Conference, because there's been three guys, for the most part, have hung out West. You know, not really LeBron, but Curry and KD seems like have been kind of the Western Conference, and then you know, LeBron and the Lakers for these years, and it's about done. It's just about done. And then who's going to be poised to take that spot? Looks like, obviously, Oklahoma City is one of those that are right there in perfect position. And we may wonder if we're going to end up having maybe some 7 o'clock playoff games for years to come with Oklahoma City. I mean, it's going to be like right down I-35 and split over to San Antonio. Feels like where the real strength of the Western Conference is going to be.
Yeah.
And then there's still, you know, there's also Memphis. Who the heck knows about Memphis? If Ja can ever figure it out with all the young talent that they have, too. That could be another one. But, yeah, it's a different time. It's about to be a totally different time in the West here in the next year or two. Did you see the ratings for the WNBA draft?
No, I did not. I did not see that.
2.54 million? Was the number
like sustain the entire night or for the first pick?
It was 4.5, excuse me. 2.45 million. viewers watched the WNBA draft on ESPN on Monday. What do you think the previous record high was?
Oh, my goodness. Not that high. The previous record? Uh-huh. 1 point something? I don't know. What is it?
600K.
Wow. You know, I will say this. They advertised it better. Because I would, in the past.
Because they had somebody to market.
Yeah. In the past, I had no idea there was a draft until after the fact. But I knew that draft was happening. I didn't watch it because there was no drama for us. Like, yeah, everybody knows Caitlin Clark's going number one. Everybody knows that.
How long do you think this can sustain?
Well, I mean, it's going to sustain for the first couple weeks the interest of Caitlin Clark. Can her game transfer over to the WNBA? And so, and I've already seen that, what are they, the Fever?
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of nationally televised games because of that very reason. They want to see her and see this transfer over. So I think there'll be some interest there in her first season. But if she comes out, you know, has her rookie moments and not as good, not as dominant, that interest level might go away. What's real, and help me, maybe you know, where did Angel Reese go? When the first time they play each other, that's probably going to be highly watched. I was thinking about like this. Is this the WNBA's version of Bird versus Magic?
Yeah, they're hoping.
Coming over from the college, and it transfers over to the NBA. And of course, we got some great series and great games in that one. I'm all for it. I think that's fun. But sustainability, and that goes back to our question about the NCAA Women's Tournament. Will it be sustained next year with those record numbers that they set? We know, we agree that it won't be, but I agree. I've said it over and over. I think there'll be some residual effect of people sticking around. There's some fans that were created because of Clark and Reese, and I think the WNBA might get some fans to watch. You know, especially if the Indiana's coming to Dallas to play the Wings, there might be some kids go, hey, Mom, I want to go down there and watch that game.
No, this is that's the problem for a lot of this. I personally don't believe this is a women's basketball phenomenon. It's a Caitlin Clark phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, if anybody expects the numbers for next year's NCAA tournament to be anywhere near what they were this year, get that out of your mind. It didn't have to do with the game. It had to do with her. Like, she is the women's basketball needle. She is it. Because without, if she's not in the game, that needle isn't there. It's not there. She is the one that makes it move. And now, how sustainable can that be into the WNBA? We've never seen it sustainable. Ever. It is the WNBA has been, you realize how long it's been around? Almost 30 years.
Has it been?
Yeah, it's been like 30 years. And there is yet to be a season in which the league made money. And so for all the people that are just now figuring this out, because this lady that took the nation by storm from Iowa, and you look up and she's making $70,000 a year in the WNBA, and people are just shocked. Like, listen, if you really look at the revenues that are generated by the NBA versus the WNBA, and then the amount of like the amount of money that they're able to spend, the percentages would tell you that the WNBA players are actually overpaid for what they generate. But we're so used to multi-million dollar contracts in all professional sports that when you see one that's not even $100,000, you're just like shocked, right?
Yeah.
Like, where's the other zero or two? But it's not there. And it leads to one last question about her. we talked about this during the tournament. How surprised are you knowing now? I mean, we kind of knew what we knew these numbers were what these numbers were as far as contract wise in the WNBA. A lot of people didn't have any idea that that was the case. And now that they're seeing what there is, the question inevitably comes back to, well, why in the world did she leave Iowa? She had to have been able to make more money at Iowa than what she's making in the WNBA.
I wonder if, and I'm sure she studied this, and she got good people around her to make that decision. I wonder if someone said, listen, you're not going to get paid a lot, like you just mentioned the WNBA, but you're going to make a lot of money in advertising deals.
That's the question right there that we'll just ask on the text line, 225-9698. How much would she make on endorsements in the WNBA?
Yep.
Oh, it probably...
She was already doing it.
Yeah.
She had State Farm commercial. Mm-hmm. Saw some others, like AT&T, I'm not sure.
I'm guessing, you know, if she's making $75,000 in the contract of the WNBA, she's got to be upwards of 5 to 10 times that. Off the floor, 3 to 7 million, something. I mean, I would assume it would be millions. And then the question is, how long will that last? Well, that question goes hand in hand with how long will her phenomenon last?
Mm-hmm.
And how long will these numbers, these record-setting numbers for women's basketball continue with her involved? And that probably speaks to a little bit of what can her success be in the WNBA. Can she continue to be some of what she has been, right? And continue to hold the nation's attention. Because unfortunately, if she rolls in the WNBA and averages 6 a game, this is over.
It's true.
You know, she has to continue to be what she's been, or some semblance of what she's been.
Yeah.
And isn't it funny, all these the WNBAers that are jealous of her already without her ever playing a game? Their financial future is almost staked to her success in a lot of ways.
That's true.
Hanging out here on a Wednesday. Don't forget, lunch is coming. Supper's coming. Great place to be, the Boomtown Grill. Boomtown open every day of the week. Happy hours from 2 to 6, Monday through Friday, 12 big screen TVs, appetizer plates and drink specials, 11 beers on tap, 30 different bottles and cans available, import and domestic, large wine selection. The Boomtown Grill. Tomorrow is 50 Cent Wing Day. That means today, though, you can enjoy a pizza, pastas, sandwiches, burgers, or salads. They got a steak salad, a chicken salad, if you're more the healthier type. Boomtown Grill, 2103 South Main in Elk City. What, Jared?
I just thought it was funny. I was curious of what the effect of the Caitlin Clark era in
for
the
everybody.
WNBA.
We were talking off air about like tickets, and you know the last time we kind of saw this huge discrepancy of tickets from one person was when Messi came, to the MLS, and how different it was to get a ticket to a random game versus a Messi game.
Right.
So now we were comparing that with Caitlin.
Yeah, and this so I mentioned Dallas Wings. That's the WNBA team, obviously, in Dallas. They actually play in Arlington. But they so I'm just looking at SeatGeek. According to SeatGeek.com, you're welcome, SeatGeek. Free advertising there. That's where I go to find tickets. So I'd say average home game price, cheapest ticket would be about $40, $42. Not a bad price to get in. It's not a huge arena either. It's actually the UT Arlington's arena where they play. This one, they might have to move it into
American Airlines.
The Indiana Fever come to – it's a Wednesday night. Keep that in mind. A Wednesday night game, I think it's in July 17th, I'm guessing. The most expensive ticket, it's a courtside baseline, not on the side, baseline. A little over $2,000 a seat. Now the cheapest ticket, you're up in the still baseline, but higher up in the upper section, $160. That's the Caitlin Clark effect,
yeah.
And that's where the money's coming in. ticket prices. The place will be packed wherever she goes. It's going to be packed.
Yeah, and TV. That TV will be the big thing.
TV.
We can continue to get
the ratings go up. The dollars will follow.
Dollars could follow.
Yep.
Because you look at the deals. I mean, the WNBA deal is like $600 million. That is chump change in TV deals, and that's why the salaries are what they are. The league doesn't make any money, and that's just what it is. All right, high school baseball from yesterday. The Big Elks clinch their third straight district title with a 4-0 win right here inside Ackley Park against the Weatherford Eagles. The Elks scored 3 runs in the first and then just kind of cruised. They had a chance to really blow that thing open and never could quite get the hit that would do it. But a 4-0. Colin Church was really good at the plate with a couple of doubles and RBI. And then Mayfield on the mound gave up his first 2 hits of the season. But still, 5 2/3. He threw 77 pitches. 57 of them were strikes. Where I sat yesterday, I was close enough to kind of get some peeks at the radar guns that were aplenty. I think somebody counted 44 scouts were there yesterday to watch Mayfield. He was consistently 94 to 96. Like I said, 57 strikes and 77 pitches. He had full command. And you can see why a lot of those guys were there. And so the Elks continue their dominance of the district out here. J-Mac 3-for-3 as far as his team's winning the district. Side note to that, they haven't lost the district game since he's been the head coach in these 3 years. Hope I don't jinx that for today as they'll do the return trip. They skip Monday because of the chance of the weather. And so they played yesterday game one here, and then they'll go to Weatherford this afternoon at 4:00. And that'll be the last district game of the season for the Elks, but they have clinched at 11-0 in the district, Weatherford 9-2. So the Eagles trying a win would keep them at second, which would also mean hosting a regional. With the way that those two teams split, if I remember the tiebreakers right, well, for one, Weatherford's 38 district points to 55 for McGinnis. So that would obviously go the Irish's way. They split their district games. But if I remember right, I think it's how you fare against each other. Not only like would run differential, that would go to McGinnis as well. As Weatherford won their game 8-3, McGinnis won 15-5. So McGinnis would be +5 in runs against the Eagles head to head. They split the games. So it looks to me like every tiebreak possible would go to McGinnis. So it's a big game for the Weatherford Eagles. If they can knock off the Elks, then that would mean they would host a regional. Elk City-wise, they're hosting regionals. More than likely, probably will end up in the top 8 if they advance through the regional to go ahead and host an area. Give you an idea of where that may be headed. District 2. So you'd play the 8th place team out of District 2. The 4th place team out of District 4, and the 5th place team out of District 1. Well, District 2 only has 7 teams, so there isn't an 8th place team. Trying to get clarification on how that'll set up. Does that mean you still draw up a 4-team bracket and the Elks just move into essentially the semifinals with a bye because there's no opponent, or will it go a different way with 3 teams? But it looks like Bridge Creek is coming out here as the 4th place team in District 4A4, and then it could be Being or Ada as the 5th place team in District 1, at least right now. They all have kind of different rainouts or different schedules, mm-hmm. where they've got to still play some district games or finish up some district games throughout the week. Right now it looks like that's where it would be the 3-teamer that would be here. And actually, that could change today. Tomorrow. Take that back. Purcell and Bridge Creek play each other. Winter comes.
Purcell and you say Bridge?
Bridge Creek and Purcell. They're both 7-6. They play tomorrow in their final district game.
So simple as that. Winter comes out this way.
Winter comes out this way. I would love to know where the loser would go. And if they think to themselves,
let's
maybe not. Maybe we don't want to see Mayfield. I mean, I'm serious about that.
Congratulations, freshman. You're starting today.
I don't know. That'll be an interesting to see the result of that one. Then being an Ada, I think they still play. Let's see here. They still play two. And right now, being is a game ahead of Ada at 6-6 versus 5-7. And they play tomorrow and Friday to finish up their district schedule. It'll be. I can't wait to see the results of some of this.
Yeah.
Just if there is that thought. And I don't know where they'd go if they, you know.
Well, the important thing is,
if you have to go play Tuttle, yeah. I don't know if it does you any good there either.
Well, we know where Elk City will be. That's right here.
Yep. Here in Ackley Park for regionals. And like I said, more than likely, I have a hard time believing that they wouldn't be, if they advance to regionals, wouldn't be one of the top eight. In the state of in 4A, yeah. I really have a hard time believing they wouldn't be ranked in the top eight, which at that point, then the next week, so literally next Thursday, I would bet we would have district or regional baseball here at Ackley Park, and then if that goes well, the following week, probably on a Thursday, we'd have more of it for area in a three-game series to try to make it back to third straight state tournament. For J-Mac and the Big Oaks. So, good stuff there. Small schools, I know Canute starts today. What's going on over at Canute?
Oh, man, I had that pulled up. Yes, they do start today at 1 o'clock. Take that back. 11 o'clock, Burns Flat in Sealing. We'll start things off 1 o'clock, Sealing and Canute, and then 3 o'clock, Canute and Burns Flat. The winners play tomorrow at 11, and the IF game's at 1 o'clock.
Looks like Cheyenne gets going today as well down at Hollis. Be Cheyenne and Snyder at 11, Cheyenne and Hollis at 1. You know, I'll be interested to see if that's what happens with that regional here or if it'll be different. Let's see. What else we got here? I think a bunch of it starts tomorrow. A majority starts tomorrow. No, Rapo starts tomorrow. Leedy starts tomorrow as far as hosts around here. Sentinel tomorrow, it looks like. So there's a sprinkling of baseball, and I think it probably some of that is to try to beat the weather on Saturday for sure, you know, depending on how the thing goes. But a majority of that will start tomorrow, and we'll know basically who's into the regional tournaments for A and B by Friday night. And then we'll just wait the weekend to see where everybody goes. And how many teams are going to be playing each other, and how many teams may have to go a little bit further east for a trip to regionals and try to get themselves into the A or B state baseball tournaments. Slow pitch, same way?
Slow pitch, I know, again, I'm getting this from a principal. Canute plays tomorrow. They start there, and they host district tomorrow. Oklahoma Bible and Pond Creek coming to
which obviously you can play. The weather isn't near the concern in the slow pitch as it would be with possibility of Saturdays, if that's even possibilities, depending on how many you got in your regional. A bunch of these are three-team districts, so there really isn't that threat of Saturday.
This will get done in one day.
Exactly. The slow pitch can all happen in one day.
Yeah. I guess the question is the wind. Sometimes it can be crazy windy, and that messes with slow pitch. But I think tomorrow's weather is going to cooperate, too.
Yeah, it didn't seem like there's a ton.
No.
I mean, there is wind, but as far as rain and stuff, that's not till Saturday. Yeah, everybody's playing tomorrow. Looking down through the schedule. Going to have a bunch tomorrow. Maybe even Friday. So anyway, good stuff. Very good stuff. I can't believe it. We're almost at the end of the high school sports calendar. And it seems like we just started.
My anxiety level's already going up thinking about football season because I don't have a schedule.
I forgot to bring the computer. I was going to bring it to you today. Baseball or whatever.
We'll get her done. We'll have it covered.
Everybody have a great Wednesday. Be back tomorrow. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.